the Badlands. Explain those Badlands. That's a hell of a name.
Are you ready to diversify your assets with Bitcoin? Introducing River, the official Bitcoin partner of Badlands Media, where you can navigate the world of Bitcoin with confidence. With River, you can buy Bitcoin like a pro. With the assurance of being licensed and regulated here in the United States, River ensures your Bitcoin journey is smooth and secure with on-demand live support at your fingertips. River empowers you to grow your portfolio without any unwanted surprises and eliminates third-party custodians, putting you in control of your assets. Open an account with no premium purchase requirement. You can get your Bitcoin journey started with just $1. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/river to create your River account today. That's badlandsmedia.tv/river. River, shaping the future of finance, one Bitcoin at a time. Welcome to episode 70 of Knowledge Base. I am your host, Justin. Jordan is away for this show. Again, he's still dealing with some life stuff, so y'all send him some love. He's just moving, by the way, so nothing too important or major anyway. So welcome to the show. Hopefully I'm coming through okay. There were some technical glitches on my end, but I got the show up at last minute. Nothing like just before a show, everything crashes and you got to get in literally as the intro is playing. So how's it going, everybody? I see we got our favorites in the chat. We got Joker, Sammy, Davey, Lulu. How's it going? So hopefully, give me one second. I'm just going to make sure I'm actually coming through all right. Okay, looks like I'm coming through okay. So, yeah, I'm not sure what the issue is here, but for some reason, all of a sudden, my computer just really struggles to do streaming. So I'll have to work on that one. But yeah, I'm really excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today, because as a lot of you know, I'm writing this book about elections. And one of the things I'm going to do in this book about elections is talk about kind of like what society is, what civilization is, how that links up with God or the purpose I think God laid out for human beings. And I'm going to do it in a way that the Founding Fathers did it. So the Founding Fathers were really unique in what they did with this, because instead of attaching our society into a specific branch of religion, which is what most of the civilizations did beforehand, they created this, well, they didn't create it, but they use this concept of theism. So it's almost like if you took all the practical aspects of what the belief of God and the philosophic underpinnings of that, and you use that as a framework, like a foundation, and then you built a society on top of that, what you get is a society where instead of there being kings and queens that rule over everything and, you know, the people are just peasants or slaves to the aristocracy, you have a society where each individual is itself a vessel where rights are contained. And then because of that, we have these incredible powers to have freedom. But as with many things, when it comes to the concept of God, it's not just do anything you want. So freedom needs to be understood really clearly if we want to be able to derive from our freedoms as much benefit, because freedom, in my opinion, and as we'll get into in the show today, is itself a tool that helps us move closer to God, and that creates prosperity. The Founding Fathers described it as the pursuit of happiness. And that means that we have to have what I'm calling rules-based freedom. So a lot of the stuff, the substance of what makes the United States one of the greatest countries on earth, it's not necessarily because it's like, you know, rah-rah United States, my team's the best. And it's just pure conviction and passion behind the substance of what that statement means, the best. It's a technical description. It's the best because it's technically the country that's the most free. And in the modern age, we've kind of lost touch with a lot of this essential knowledge of what the Founding Fathers spent probably a long time, probably their lifetimes developing. And as I mentioned previously on, I think it was last week's show, the Founding Fathers were reared in this, or they grew up in, or the societies and the times that they grew up in was really special because it was the birth of rationality. Now, there was a whole malevolent component to the birth of rationality because what, in my opinion, what the powers that be were trying to do, and if anybody's ever studied, you know, the societies and the people around the so-called Bavarian Illuminati, then you know what they were trying to do is they were trying to use the concept of a revolution and giving people a democracy as a way to basically take power away from the competing gang, for lack of a better term, and with that control society from behind the scenes. Because when you have a democracy, meaning you have a country that is at least on the surface designed to give freedom to the people, meaning the people are the ones who are ultimately deciding what's going on. Well, if the people don't have wisdom, if the people don't really know what they're doing, then they're not necessarily going to create a perfect society or even anything close to it. What they're going to do is you still have to have experts, you still have to have a bureaucracy and an aristocracy in a different form to actually make society function in any real sense. So one of the things we're going to get to talk about tonight is what freedom is and why civilization is really the ultimate tool of freedom. So before we get to that, let me ask you guys, you know, I'm going to try to engage you as much as I can in the chat because I, you know, one of the benefits to doing these shows is I get to talk to all sorts of cool people in the chat. So good to see everybody. So I want you to ask yourself, like, what is freedom to you? You know, is it just doing whatever you want? Is it more than that? Because if you look at what the Founding Fathers did, they did not necessarily think that freedom meant a libertine freedom or what you might call like a Luciferian type of a freedom where people would just do whatever the hell they want and there's no rules or anything like that. So, you know, what is freedom to you? Go ahead and put your answer in the chat. I'll try to keep my eyes on it. And hopefully everything seems to be coming through. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at the monitors. Everything's all right. We still got a good show. So, all right, so let's start this conversation with a few quotes. Let me pull up some quotes. And we're going to start with, let's start with this one. This is one that I've mentioned several times on the show. I'm hardly a Bible scholar, but there's a few sections of the Bible that I think really nail it, and if you know how to interpret it properly, then you get some really good understanding to work with. So this one in particular, Matthew 5:48, says, "Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." And I think what is one of the interpretations here is excellence, the pursuit of excellence, meaning God gave us this body, he gave us a mind, he gave us rights for a reason. And it wasn't just to do whatever the hell we want with. It was because there's a grand design at work here. Now, of course, the atheists will say, there's no grand design. There's nothing really going on here. It's just a bunch of random chaos. But that, as I've mentioned before on the show I did a few weeks ago about qualified voting, you know, that from an epistemological perspective or the philosophy of knowledge or simply, well, what is the rationale that you might have for anything that you might claim to be true. The idea that chaos is what's at work in everything and we just live in a material universe, it starts to fall apart because one of the things that can't be denied about our universe is that we live in a universe where we have order. You know, there's one of the things, if you ever heard of chaos theory before, you might hear that the idea of chaos theory and think, oh, well, it's a theory where everything is designed to be or understood as being totally and completely chaotic. But that's not actually the case. It looks chaotic. So for example, if you were to, let's say you had a tennis court and you had a bunch of marbles and you threw those marbles on the tennis court. And then you looked at the pattern that was created by the marbles hitting the tennis court. You might think to yourself, oh, well, that's very chaotic, meaning that the marbles seem to be kind of all over the place. But in reality, each marble, as it left your hand, had a definitive trajectory. It wasn't anywhere. It was a marble leaving your hand at a specific place, kind of like a bullet leaving a gun. And then when it hit the ground with a certain level of angle and momentum so that when that energy that was carried through the throwing of the marbles was dissipated, it landed in a place and rested in a place. And all these different marbles, if you were to look at them, they're not chaotic at all. They are actually from a place of, you know, how do you calculate where these marbles might go, or try to understand where these marbles might go? All the marbles are going to end up in a place that you can backtrack from that point of throwing out the marbles. So what I'm getting at here is that even though you might look at the array of marbles and it kind of looks like a scattershot, each marble was carefully placed there as a series of cause and effect events tracing back to the point when you throw it out. And reality itself, very similar. You know, everything that we see in our reality, from the stars in the sky to the sun in the solar system to our own bodies to all sorts of things, can be traced through causality. And because every single object, materially especially, occupies a certain space and time, it means that there's a kind of grand order behind everything, because your ability to understand why, for example, you eat, you know, if you eat a bunch of crappy food, what happens to your body? Well, it's because that the way that things happen in reality fits a certain order. We call those things usually natural law. And because there's an order, that means that things can't be just a random mash. Each marble can only occupy a certain area of time and space. And because of that, when it goes to land on the ground, it's going to land on a piece on the ground on the tennis court in a definitive place. A marble can't like pass through another marble to land totally anywhere. So what I'm getting at here is that the nature of the universe and reality is that we have this thing called the truth, or the one truth, or is that everything is connected. And because of that, the understanding that we have is that there's a kind of purpose here. When I throw the marble is going to move down a course that is itself going to relate to where the marble came from, and that suggests that there's purpose. All right, so the grand purpose of reality, I would argue, relates to the idea of a father in heaven or a God, because the ultimate explanation for where everything comes from is that there is a place where everything comes from. Even material physics talks about this idea of a Big Bang, and this idea of a Big Bang essentially talks about the idea that everything that we see came from one single event in time. So where did that event come from? So from an epistemological perspective, or, you know, what is the argument that underpins something that you claim to be true? You can ask the question, what's called epistemic regress. Well, where did the creation come from? Where did the universe come from if it just blipped out of existence in this Big Bang event something like 13.8 billion years ago? Well, the materialists do not have an answer, but there is an answer, and the answer is God, that this universe was created. And the fact that this universe was created, in the sense that that explanation holds true, it actually makes sense in your mind, there's a coherent logic, means that we can use that as a way to build other things on top of. And that's kind of what the Founding Fathers did. They realized that the best explanation for where everything comes from is that there's a creator. Now, what they did was brilliant. They decided that instead of trying to say that, well, it was any one God, whether it was Vishnu or, some version of Judaism or some version of Christianity, they said, well, one thing that's common out of all of these is that we have a creator. So if you were to take like an archetypal, meaning if you were to ask yourself, what's the common element between all of these religions, you get the idea of a creator. So if things were made for a purpose, then what is the purpose? I mean, look at human life. You know, what do animals do? They're not just running around like crazy. Is there an intention? There's a goal that they have in mind. An animal that hunts, for example, like my house cat, you know, he's trying to find food, or he's entertaining himself because his body was specifically equipped with certain tools like vision that tracks motion, will receive a psychological reward for chasing things. So because of that, there's a kind of purpose, there's an intent, there's a motion to, or a momentum behind actions. So what we're getting at here is that I think excellence, or the quest to try to make your life as good as humanly possible, is one of the things that the Founding Fathers developed or understood. And they said, well, that's the common element. You know, no matter how crazy somebody might be, almost everybody is at least trying to make their life a little bit better from moment to moment, right? Like if you, let's say you ate some food one night and the food made you sick. Well, almost everybody is going to think to themselves, maybe I shouldn't eat that food anymore. Maybe I should eat a different kind of food. So that desire to try to change your circumstances so you create goodness, or you create the experience of at least not being sick, is something that almost everybody does. Even psychopaths, you know, people who are totally, completely nuts, they're being driven by this desire to move from one emotional state to another. So I think we can call that the pursuit of excellence. The founding fathers call it the pursuit of happiness. And they also called it prosperity. So when a bunch of people get together and they're trying to figure out a way to help each other, then they are going to work together in some way. So for example, if you go try and live totally on your own in the woods somewhere, it's really hard. You got to like figure out your shelter. I mean, if anybody's ever tried to like create a shelter from nothing, I did that in Boy Scouts many years ago, and it was not easy. You know, I grabbed all these branches, I cut them off of the tree with this knife that I had. I found like a rock that I could lay these branches across, and then I laid some pine and leaves and things down to make like a bed to insulate myself from the ground. And despite my best efforts, I was still really cold and I barely slept that night in this like survival type of a challenge that we had when I was in Boy Scout camp. This was, I think it was in like seventh grade or something like that. So, I think this, you need, because everybody has to survive, and the same basic needs are spread across everybody. Like, I need food, you need food. I need water, you need water. I pursue happiness, meaning I don't want to just have the food and water that I need. I want to do it in a house that's beautiful with friends that I love and things like this. Then that, I think, creates this strong purpose behind our actions. And this is what the founding fathers definitely did. They realized that across everybody, you have these common needs. And in order to facilitate these needs from a theistic perspective, meaning because we are in effectively a giant game world where there's a creator, there's a purpose who created this world, or I'm sorry, there's a creator who created this world, and there's a purpose behind this world, then you're going to have a situation where we have certain tools that the creator gave us, which they call the rights. So, thanks everybody. So if I'll go ahead and respond to the chat for a minute. So let's see, where is Mia Hunter says, Justin, you look amazing and vital, back to your old self. Yes, definitely. I feel much better. Not really any lingering issues. Occasionally I get like a little nerve pain in the area of my body. I still have some numbness in a certain part of my body, but other than that, you know, I feel really good. So thank God for that. So anyway, so, you know, let's see, where can I take this? You guys are kind of getting like a little glimpse into how I do my book writing. And if anybody's ever been familiar with this, this branch, I guess you could call it, of astrology, although I don't know if that's the right form of it. I'm not necessarily like, you know, hugely into astrology, but as being somebody who likes to study a lot of different things, if something has predictive power, then if it explains something in a way that lives, when I use that information, I can actually do something practical in my life, then, you know, I think it's worth studying. And this idea of a system that can be used to understand the kind of underlying archetypes that a person comes with, or the personality types, is really useful. I mean, in the modern world, we have all sorts of different versions of psychology. You might have heard the Myers-Briggs test, like the ENFJ, INFJ, things like this. Well, that is a personality assessment, and that personality assessment allows you to know yourself a little bit better. And because of that, because you are like a kind of cosmic machine, we might say, there's certain things you can do and certain things you can't do. It helps, really helps to know who you are and what you can do. And as a result, you can, you know, improve yourself. For example, you might be really good at math, in which case things that involve math, you feel like you can really achieve better than things that don't involve math necessarily. So anyway, the reason I bring that up is there's something called human design, and human design is like one of these different types of a personality body of knowledge, a model of personalities, models meaning something that is a concept. Like there's, you know, your map that you use to go from one place to another in your head of your house is a model. It represents something, in this case, your house. And because when you use that map of what's happening in your head, to navigate your house. Let's say if you got to go to the bathroom, or you got to grab some food, or you got to take out the trash, or whatever it is you have to do, then that model, it can be useful. It has a coherence, meaning it matches reality. And because it matches reality, it's practically useful. You can use that model to do things in the world that allow you to accomplish things. So human design is one of these models. And what's cool about human design is there's different types. My wife's pretty into it, not like obsessed about it, but she's, you know, she explores this a little bit. And apparently I have something called a mental projector. And for mental projectors, they like to, let's see, how do they describe it? Basically, you guide your thinking and your authority, they call it. So this is what I understand about it anyway. Your ability to kind of manifest your better faculties. Like if you were a guitar player, you know, what is the thing that allows you to play guitar really well? Well, in this system, you'd call that an authority, at least as far as I understand it. And for me, having a dialogue of the things that I want to make use of, especially at like a conceptual level, is really helpful. So when I'm writing, what I tend to do is I sit down, I'm like, all right, I want to think about, you know, why elections are tied to, like, the quality of elections are tied to the quality of life. And so I'll think about that. And then I'll think, well, you know, what is the purpose of civilization? We have things in our reality that are like tools, right? Like a hammer is good for hammering in nails. A car is good for driving from one place to another. So what is this civilization good for? Ultimately, the thing that civilization is good for is pursuing excellence, making your life better. So anyway, so as the aspect of mental being a mental projector is that when you are a mental projector, you want to dialogue with things to kind of hear what comes out, and then what resonates or what motivates you or inspires you kind of helps guide my process of creation. So anyway, when I'm writing, the reason I'm saying all this is because when I go to write, whether it's a Substack or a book, or I used to write scripts for the show Into the Storm on Rise.tv, I often would go for a walk and then flip on my voice recorder and just start, you know, walking myself through a set of topics, and I'd eventually get like a kind of clear understanding of what I wanted to talk about, and then I'd, you know, write something with it. So basically when I'm on a podcast, I'm doing exactly the same thing. So there you go. So anyway, how's it going, everybody? So what I wanted to do, let's see if I can find any of the answers. I asked earlier a question, like, what is freedom? And freedom, I would say, is, you know, the ability to do things. But it's not the ability to do anything you want. I think, you know, if we live in a purposeful universe, which I think we do, then freedom is just another tool. Meaning, because when you have a purpose, right? Let's say you want to build a house. What do you use to create or manifest that purpose? You use tools. And there's every object that exists in reality has some kind of usefulness, right? Like if I want a cell phone and I want to call my friend, I pick up my cell phone. If I want to drive a nail into a piece of wood because I'm building something, I use a hammer. So what is civilization good for? Well, I think civilization is good for freedom. It's kind of like the ultimate tool of freedom. And that's the topic of today's show. What do I mean by that? Well, freedom is itself the ability. If we define freedom, I'm going to define it for you. It's the ability to use your choices, your will. So whether it's talking about freedom of movement, whether it's talking about freedom of your mind, the ability to think about different thoughts, whether it's freedom to have a good time with another person, it allows you to take the things that you want to do, your goals, and then manifest them. When you have the freedom to act on your passions, for example, when you have the freedom to play an instrument, it means you have the tools necessary to do so. So in order to have those tools, you got to have property. You got to have objects. Like if I wanted the freedom to be a guitar player, I'd need a guitar. I need the time and the place to do it. And then in order to have, let's say, the leisure time associated with playing guitar, I have shelter. I can't be spending all my time trying to, you know, survive. And this is what civilization comes to, is because there's something called the law of squares, which is basically that when you add some things together, instead of getting just 2 + 2 = 4, you get 2 + 2 = 8. Well, in order to do that, you need to use exponents. So I'm kind of getting into a little bit of fancy math here. But what we're getting at is that when you take two people and you ask them to work together to create a better survival situation, you tend to get more than just the sum of those two people's abilities. For example, if I want to cook a meal for myself, right, I'm going to have to cut up vegetables. I'm going to have to find chicken, maybe marinate some chicken. I'm going to have to, you know, pull out the pans, all these kind of things. And if you're living in a house with, let's say, three other people and you each need to eat a meal, well, if we do it isolate, if we're isolatedly trying to cook a meal and prepare for ourselves, it's going to take a lot more time and energy. I'm going to have to go to the kitchen, grab the chicken, cut up the vegetables, you know, prepare all that stuff, put it like on a little plate so I can have it ready for when I actually want to cook. Then I have to take out my pan, heat that pan up, pour some oil on it, maybe put some rice in a rice cooker, things like this. And then all of that has to take, let's say, at least an hour, right? Well, then when I'm done, I have to clean all that up. So, but when you, I would say all said and done, when you go to cook a meal, unless you're really, really good at doing stuff and you've got everything prepped, it's probably going to take you like an hour, we'll say, and then maybe like another 10, 20 minutes of cleanup. So let's say an hour and 20 minutes. Well, if you're doing that alone and another person has to come after you and do the same thing, it's going to take them another hour and 20 minutes, right? So, well, let's just say if you three people who are trying to cook meals for themselves, if they each want to do it in an independent fashion, meaning I'm going to cook my meal in the kitchen, then when I'm done, I'm going to be like, hey, man, it's your turn to cook lunch for yourself. Go ahead and have at it. And then, you know, the person after me does the same thing to the other person in the house. Well, then you've got 3 hours and 20 minutes. So that's 4 hours, basically, of time that's going to be consumed. Well, what if we did this? What if when I cooked my meal, I said, hey, you know what? Do you want dinner too? Well, if you want dinner too, and we can agree on using our free speech to talk about what we want and negotiate a contract, then by the virtue of our agreement, then I can cook a meal. And the time it takes to cook for three people isn't really all that much more than it takes to cook for one person. Maybe there's a little bit of an extra time because you're cutting up like three times the vegetables or kitchen. So yes, there's of course an increase in time. But the increase in benefit as associated with the time it takes to prepare those vegetables is much smaller. For example, if I want to cook a meal for myself, it takes about an hour and 20 minutes. If I want to cook a meal for you, it's probably going to take an hour and 25 minutes for two people. And if I want to cook a meal for three people, it's going to take an hour and, let's say, 30 minutes. So instead of it taking just an hour, 20 minutes, an hour, 20 minutes, an hour, 20 minutes to cook for three people, it actually only takes an hour and a half. And this is one of the amazing things about the way God designed the universe, because when people come together and they are their brother's keeper, meaning we actually work together in trust, we use our free speech and we create agreements to share our rights together, then when I use my rights to create something of benefit, then it takes less time for everybody to receive the benefit. So think about that for a minute. That's a really powerful concept. Hey, my wife's in the chat. How's it going, baby? So ask yourself, I mean, you know, if you've ever lived alone, it takes a long time to do, you know, one thing. You got to wash your dishes. You got to vacuum the house. You got to clean the floor. You got to clean the bathrooms. You got to, you know, do your laundry. I mean, there's like so many different things that have to happen for one person to live a reasonably clean life, you know, and have that work in an orderly fashion. I know I've lived alone. It takes way more time than I initially thought when I was living in my mother's house. And the dreams of being free from my mother were like, you know, filled with my mind. So I would say that when you pool your resources, when you go to live with another person to make the practical needs of your life better, you are creating a civilization. And that's basically what a civilization is. It's that you, when you and another person and potentially many people come together to use your rights in an organized fashion to produce benefits for each other, you're living in a civilization. So a civilization is a tool that gives me more benefits. So what happens when I use my rights? It creates something, doesn't it? So think about that for a minute. Before we continue, we're going to hear from one of our amazing sponsors right now.
I'm excited to announce we're having a huge MyPillow spring sale. And here's a few examples. Buy one of our MyPillow 2.0s, you get another MyPillow 2.0 absolutely free. Made with cooling technology, the best pillow ever just got even better. And this just in, 9 brand new colors and styles of our Percale bed sheets. They're made with the finest long staple cotton, and now you can save 50% or more. That's as low as $24.98. And for the first time this year, I'm bringing you our My Slippers and Sandals for as low as $25 a pair. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your MyPillow 2.0s. Buy one, get one free. Percale sheets as low as $24.98. My Slippers and Sandals as low as $25 a pair. And for a limited time, when you order $75 or more, your entire order ships absolutely free.
All right, so the question we're trying to figure out is, why is civilization the ultimate tool of freedom? And freedom, I would say in a general sense, it's the desire to want to do more things with your life, right? If you're stuck on a deserted island, you don't have freedom to necessarily hang out with your friends. You don't have freedom to do a bunch of different things because you're spending most of your time surviving. So let me ask you guys, how many people have lived alone? It looks like, let me pull up that comment. Where is it? Lulu, I believe, said they've never lived alone, or maybe it was Mia Hunter. Here it is, yeah. Mima Hunter says they've never lived alone. Well, that's interesting. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. You know, when you're a kid, you think, my family, blah, 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 blah. So at least in the modern age, we think these things. But, living alone is not necessarily all it's cracked up to be. As a matter of fact, my wife and I were doing a little family planning right now, and she's in this non-toxic mamas group. And there was this story of somebody had mentioned that there was this couple had been living with, I believe it was the husband's in-laws. And so they had this dream about living on their own and all that great stuff, right? Well, they finally achieved this dream. And now what happened, the mother is at home taking care of the baby and the husband's out for most of the day working. And so now, instead of having 3 people in the house, the grandparents plus mama to take care of the baby and take care of the house, now it's just her. Now she's alone, which means that she can't, do a bunch of different things. She can't have the benefit of other people. She has to spend, not only time taking care of the kid, but then somehow get away long enough to cook food and clean the house and all these kind of things. So living alone is not necessarily this amazing thing that we've been led to believe it is. And interestingly enough, if you look at a lot of media like, Sex and the City or a lot of different TV shows, they tend to depict people that live alone, like for Seinfeld, for example. I used to love that show. And Jerry's living alone, because George is living alone. Elaine's living alone. And they kind of just make it seem like it's, this fine thing. But living alone sucks. Like having other people that you can call your friends, that you can share life with is a lot better. That's one of the reasons I'm so into community. So to get to the punchline here, so freedom as the ultimate tool, or civilization as the ultimate tool of freedom, is that when you have the freedom to exercise your rights, you create benefits. And when you take 2 people or more people and you join them together in a trust to create a kind of community environment, then you can actually enhance the freedom of everybody. And what you get is more benefits for people. So family's a perfect example of this. You would think like the more kids I have, the harder it's going to be to take care of them. But if you do any research on, the time cost and the other practical costs associated with being a parent with respect to how many kids you have, well, it's kind of like, cats. Like once you got 1 cat, then adding 2, 3, 4, 5, 20 cats, although I've never had that many, you add work to it, but it's not all that much more work to have 3 cats as it is to have 1 cat. And when it comes to children, it's very similar. Now, there's some things that's not true for. So, for example, children need a lot of time and attention. The more social time you give a kid, the better it's going to be in a million different ways. So if it's just you raising 2 kids or 3 kids or 5 kids, then that puts a certain burden on that. But the kids can relate with each other. So community is very similar. The more people you have in a community, the easier it is for everybody to live and the more benefit you have because now everything becomes socialized. So this is one of the things that I think we've been deprived of with respect to our civilization is that we've been led to believe that living alone and not having community is somehow this amazing gift, and it gives you more freedom. But think about it. If you live alone, then you have to spend an hour and 20 minutes cooking your food. And Lulu was like, hey, what the hell are you cooking that's taking an hour and 20 minutes? Well, I'm just throwing an example out there, but fair point. Yeah, it shouldn't take necessarily that long. And, you know, God love us. We work really hard to make sure it doesn't take that long. But the point is that when you have people living together in trust, and I'm going to get to the in trust part, it maximizes and enhances freedom. And this is what I think being your brother's keeper is all about. And there's a section I'm going to read from Corinthians here in a minute that I think really lays this into place. So civilization is the ultimate tool of freedom because a functioning and healthy community basically makes every problem not only potentially solved, but better. So what do I mean by that? Well, if you're living in a community, think about it like this. If you've got to survive, you can work with other people. If you're living in a big house, you know, I live in a pretty decent sized house because we, you know, we got four people living here. So if I was to try to clean and do everything for my house, it'd be a lot of work. But because I live with four other people, we get to split the duties. And like when it comes to cooking food, you know, how much time and energy does it take to cook one meal for one person versus one meal for 10 people? Well, it doesn't necessarily take all that much more time and energy. It does add time and energy for sure, but the benefit multiplies. And that's what this whole idea of the law of squares is, which is that when you combine certain things together, instead of just getting a straight addition or a linear addition, you get an exponential addition or an exponential benefit. And community and people are the same way, but this is the thing. It has to be in trust. It has to be a healthy community. It has to be a healthy civilization. And this is partially what my book is about, is that when you have cheating, when you have people that don't know how to honor each other and manipulate each other, when they are manipulating each other, then what you have is kind of the opposite. So instead of, if you've ever lived with somebody, I'm sure your children could potentially qualify, because there's a point where your kids become, you know, really rebellious and they don't necessarily want to do their part to, you know, participate in the family. I was never like that. I was always a perfect kid. No, forget about it. I was a nightmare to live with. But the point I'm getting at here is that when you have a functioning community, everything becomes easier. There's more freedom of time. So there's literally an equation you can use to calculate how much more freedom a person, an individual, receives as a result of living in a functional community or a proper and healthy civilization. And it gets exponential. And basically, think about it like this. Because each of us has rights, and those rights are themselves a kind of power, right? I have the right of freedom of speech. What does that power of freedom of speech give me? Well, it gives me the ability to communicate and work out agreements with other people, which means I can build a house. You know, I can't really build a house totally on my own. Maybe there are some people that can, but I need somebody to help me. And because I have this thing called speech, I can share my thoughts with another person. I can have what's called a meeting of the minds. We can get on the same page with each other. And then you can sacrifice your freedom in one place to join with me, and we can pool our freedoms together through trust, or what I call rules-based freedom, to actually create something of benefit that we can both benefit from. So this is where sacrifice is necessary for a community. When I say sacrifice, you might be thinking like, wait a minute, I don't want to sacrifice anything. Well, if we're talking about like a slavery type sacrifice where I'm going to make you do what I want, then yeah, you should be a little skeptical. But when we're talking about a sacrifice where it's in trust, and what in trust basically means is that we're going to sit at the negotiating table. We're going to sit at the table. We're all going to talk about, well, what do we need? You know, I need a house. You need a house. Let's say if I have a cow and I make milk as one of the things that I do, then, and you want milk, and you're a carpenter, and I'm somebody who knows how to milk cows and make cheese and all these wonderful things, then if we pool our resources together, then you can sacrifice, or you can give, or you can have a duty, because duty and sacrifice are interestingly related. When you have a duty to do something, meaning when if I ask you to come and help me build a house next Saturday for myself, well, that means you can't do other things, right? You can't be at my house, at my property, helping me build a house, while at the same time, you know, you're watching the football game, or you're at a movie theater, or you're doing any number of other things. So when you pledge, when you use your will to agree to do something, then that creates a duty. that duty is itself a performance obligation, meaning you're going to help me build my house, to use an example. So when we get together to sacrifice some other aspects of our freedom and pool our freedoms together and our rights together with a contract, then we create something of benefit, and then that benefit gets to be distributed across a set of people. And a community, a civilization, is basically a bunch of people who are learning to do that at even better and better rates. And I think this is one of the reasons why the founding fathers designed their nation the way they did. This is why rights are so important and freedom of speech is so important, because if you want to create a civilization or you want to create a functioning household, you got to actually know how to communicate with each other. When you don't communicate well with people, because let's say one person is like, well, I'm the king of the household, so I'm going to tell you what to do, then because now what I'm doing is I'm using my freedoms or my rights and I'm trying to oppress you so that I can get something I want out of you. And that's what slavery is. So when we think about what freedom is, it's the ability to have to use your will, your rights, or somehow use your body and your mind to do things that benefit you. When you pool those rights and abilities with another person, then you get a lot more benefit than you would if it was just yourself. And if you were talking about slavery, we're talking about one person trying to take the rights and freedoms of another person. So I can use a gun and I can go to you and be like, you're going to build my damn house. And if you don't build it, I'm going to shoot you. Well, you might end up doing that. But as a result of doing that, I've cost you your ability to use your rights fairly. And that's one of the things that our modern civilization has essentially done. Because when it comes down to it, you know, one of the things I'm going to be talking about in my book is like, well, what is the ultimate form of freedom and what is the ultimate form of slavery? Because these things are connected. And if I ask you, well, I'll do it this way. If I hold a gun to your head and I say, you have to help me build my house, then we would normally call something like that a slavery situation, right? When you think about slavery, you know, Kunta Kinte or something like that from The Color Purple, then what are you thinking about? Well, you're thinking about one person with some act of coercion or manipulation. So they use violence to force another person to do what they want. And I lost my train of thought for a second. Okay, so that means that if I force you to try to build my house and you don't agree to it, then that's a form of slavery, right? So if you ask yourself, what is slavery in all of its varied forms, whether it's debt slavery, or it's slavery by the end of a whip, or slavery in any other way, then it's one person using violence or force to force another person to do something that they don't want to do, they didn't consent to, right? When you use your will to say, yes, I will build your house, Justin, then you've consented to it. And now there's not a slavery situation. Now, one of the things that is very important when you're negotiating with people, and this is why multilateral contracts are so important, is that everybody has to use their freedom of speech to get on the same page. And in negotiation, that means everybody has to have the chance to talk about what they really want. That's what multilateral basically means, that multiple people, multiple perspectives are being put on the table. So when I come to you and I say, hey, I need you to build my house, if you go to talk and I'm like, I don't care what your needs are, you need to build my house or I'm going to, you know, shoot you, or I'm going to use a gun to shoot you, that's unilateral negotiation. It means I don't care about what your interests are. You need to do something for me, whether you like it or not. But when it's multilateral negotiation, it means that I'm going to be willing to hear you out. I'm going to use my free will to make the choice and accept the situation of negotiating with another person by creating an open line of communication. And then that means we can create an agreement where all of your needs and interests are represented in the agreement, just like mine, or at least that's the goal. Now, we have to use compromise, obviously, when there's a conflict there, meaning, you know, I want you to build my house next Saturday, and you're like, well, I can't build it on Saturday, but I can build it on Sunday. So that means I have to adjust what I need, and I have to use my free will again to be like, all right, body or mind or heart, I'm going to take these desires you've invested in, this idea that we're going to have a house built on Saturday, I'm going to change it and tweak it a little bit, because the tool I need to help me build the house, which is my friend, can't build it on Saturday. They can only build it on Sunday. So what does that mean with respect to the ultimate form of freedom? It means that freedom in its ultimate form, the substance of freedom, is when one person chooses of their own free will to do something. Okay? And when it comes to freedom of, you know, in a community, when everybody in the community recognizes that, well, hey, in order for me to benefit, like if you're living with two other people, let's say 10 people, you're living with 10 people, you've got this awesome, dope community in the woods, you know, we're all like Badlanders living together. You know, one person chops wood down, one person builds the houses, one person cooks the food, one person, you know, manages the dairy farm, one person grows the vegetables. You know, we got all these different jobs that people are doing. Well, if you negotiate your community properly, then you realize that, well, in order for me to have the kind of life I want to have, I need to work with other people. And I need to learn how to sacrifice certain things that I want so that we all can create an agreement that will work together. And when I choose to accept the responsibilities associated with that community and everybody else does that, then you create something really special. You create a rule of law community. You create a community where the rules of our agreement, the structure of the agreement that we could take careful time to negotiate, is the thing that actually governs our behavior. And we sacrifice our desire to do whatever the hell we want so that we can use our energy and our mental focus and our will to manifest the agreement of the community. And when you do that properly, when you have to, it's just like building anything, right? You can't just like throw a bunch of crap on a piece of paper and be like, I'm gonna build a rocket ship. It's like, well, no, you have to work with reality to use your mind to create a blueprint that is actually going to be functional and to create a rocket ship, just like with a house. I can't just decide I'm going to build a house one day and not even take a moment to try to study, well, what does it take to actually properly build a house? So the same thing is true with a community. The same thing is true with a civilization. This is what the founding fathers did. Is they, through various processes and studies and tutelage and mentorship, the people that created our country, at least if we believe the history, man, you know, some people are like, you don't really know if these people are as good as you think. And it's like, fair enough. I don't necessarily know either. But for the purpose of our discussion, the founding fathers sat down. They had a convention, which is basically means they sit down at a negotiating table and they try to figure out how can we design a nation so that everybody who is born into it or immigrates here can contribute to that nation so that we can maintain the house, to use an analogy. So if you think about a nation like a house, you got to have a roof, you got to have plumbing, you got to have, you know, water, you need food to come in, you need all these different things. That means every time there's a need, there's a job that needs to go around that need so that somebody can actually provide the benefit that when you pool it all together creates the functioning civilization or creates the functioning house. So that's what they did. They created a multilateral negotiation space called a convention or Congress, a legislature, legis, I forget the etymology for legis, but it basically refers to when people get together to agree to certain rules that then become policy. So when we all get together to do that and we've carefully designed a civilization that is going to account for all the various things that we need to account for, food, water, you know, how do we settle agreements in the future? When there's a question, how do we do our research to know what the answer might be so that then when we have that answer in truth, we can figure out, well, what should we do given this truth, which is a value argument? Then you can actually have a functioning society. And when we all agree to accept those responsibilities, now we have freedom. So freedom is the ability to do whatever you want inside of the rule or the agreement structure that you create. For example, when you're a basketball player, you have the freedom to shoot baskets with other people because you need those other people to guard you or defend your ability to stand on the court and shoot one of the baskets, and you need other people to do that. All right, so we're going to continue this discussion. I'm going to get into the Corinthians bit here in a moment. Before we do that, let's hear from one of our amazing sponsors.
Sounds rolling. All three cameras, we're good.
Andy, is there any regrets that you have in life? I should sit here and say, yeah, I got a lot of regrets. But when I look back on my life and I understand the lives that were lost, I mean, I'm sitting here with you. And I can tell my story.
Former National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, pleaded guilty today for lying to the FBI.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
He was, by definition, the most dangerous possible person. for Donald Trump to hire.
Only brilliant military career serving 33 years.
Why was he being so elusive? Mike Flynn told the truth and faced life in prison.
That movie looks kick-ass. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So don't forget, you can use a promo code. Go to badlandsmedia.tv/Flynn movie. That's Flynn movie. And you can use a promo code, and I think you can get a discount. So anyway, so civilization is the ultimate tool of freedom, because if you don't have other people to work with, it takes way longer in your life to do everything you want to do, which means you spend most of your time trying to survive and you have no freedom to enjoy any other things. For example, if you want to, let's say you want to have a TV or you want to have a guitar, you want any of the things that a civilization creates. Like, you can go online right now on Amazon, you can buy all sorts of stuff. Well, the reason that can happen is because we've created a system, a set of regulations, rules, laws that mean that in order to participate, in order to derive the benefit of going to Amazon and grabbing something you want, you have to contribute your duty. You have to do your part. This is also what's called a social contract, meaning there's a contract or an agreement that everybody has to get the benefit of whatever society produces. And there's a really interesting passage of the Bible that gets into this in a fantastic way. And in Christianity, it's often referred to as the body of Christ. And it's usually has a, at least in my understanding, I don't pretend to be an expert in every variation of the idea of the body of Christ, but it's usually referred to the different parts of the church that go to make up the population of people who've devoted themselves to Jesus and as a result are trying to live a better life for themselves, live a better life for God, live a better life for their families and things like this. So I want to take this idea of the body of Christ, and we're going to spend the remaining time we have breaking this down a little bit from a civilization perspective. So if you think about your body is made of, I think it's something, the last count I heard, it was something like 50 trillion different cells. That's a lot of cells. And these cells are working together in one of the most sophisticated and beautiful harmonies that we know of. We don't even really fully understand how amazingly our body's parts work together. So let's say the lung cell of my body, so we have a little cell in my body, in my lungs, it commits itself to doing a very specific job. And then if you think about the cells, like the tips of my fingers, it's doing this job to draw air from my environment. And at its base, at its root, it's connected to the rest of my body. And so it receives all these benefits like, you know, nutrition, water, oxygen, all this stuff. And as a result, it can have the freedom to do this job. And then it also gets the freedom to survive, or the ability to survive, because it throws its lot in with every other cell. And the whole of that creates a body that is itself governed by a soul, which is me, the thing that has a mind. And then because I'm like occupying this body, I'm very, very much like the president of my body, right? If I want it to move from one place to another, I use my will to create a directive that executes the desire for me to move from one place to another. So this idea of a body and society and even the human race itself being a body is actually spot on. And it's more than, one of the interpretations I want to offer you is that it's more than just a way to describe the church. It's actually describing, in my opinion, what the ultimate aspect of the human race is with respect to God. Because God creates things for a purpose. And the purpose is to, as I was saying earlier, manifest excellence, meaning God wants us to have dominion over the earth. He wants us to use our freedoms and our rights to work together in trust to create these communities. And these communities, in a decentralized way, they overlap each other just like our parts of our body, right? My lung cells are themselves a kind of community that links up with and organizes with another organ, like my heart, to pump blood throughout my body, which then is itself connected to a whole bunch of other different types of communities, like my finger, you know, my liver, my brain, the ear canal. All these different parts of my body are all working together. And the human race is basically exactly the same thing, except it's not a physical fleshly body in the sense that we're all just like, you know, stuck next to each other as like a cell. But we're also
we're working together in a same sense that the human body works together, except it's bigger than that. It's grander than that. And Jesus described this as the kingdom of heaven. So there's a lot of cool stuff we're going to break down into this. If I have to do another show next week, I might just spend the whole rest of the show talking about this because there's so much to break down in this. Oh, nice, Sammy. All right. And Sammy, thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate it. Sammy sends off this. Sammy says, starting the rants off tonight to help support this great show and channel. Smash the thumbs up. Yes, I really appreciate it. Go ahead and smash that thumbs up. Thank you for the support, Sam. I really appreciate it. Let me get into the section of Corinthians. This is 1 Corinthians 12 through 12:31. So unity and diversity in the body. Just as a body, the one has many parts, but all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we are baptized by one Spirit, so as to form one body. Whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free, we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but many. So what is he getting at there? Well, again, there's a million different interpretations we can put on this, and I'm not necessarily going to showcase one as being the most right one. We're going to use something that I've called, I've referred to it as critical thinking. I also referred to it as multilateral thinking or multidimensional thinking, which is basically you take a thing that you're looking at and you ask yourself, well, how many different ways can I interpret that? And you think about each one. And often the benefit from that is that you have many different overlapping versions of a truth or the truth to work with. I won't spend too much time talking about that as a technique, but that's a really cool thing to talk about too. So what is he getting at here? Well, each of us is unique, right? Like God didn't make 20 different versions of me. He made a single version of me, just like he made a single version of Sammy. He made a single version of Lulu. He made a single version of, T-Skip 17. So all of these different aspects of the human race are unique. So while we're very similar, we all have this root, if you think about it like a tree, like each branch is connected to this tree or they used the concept of a vine, right? A grapevine. There's all these different branches on the grapevine, but they're all connected to the central vine. Well, the human race is exactly the same way. And that's true physically, meaning we have physical similarities with our bodies, but it's also true mentally, meaning we have essentially the same type of mind. Now, certain people have different variations, but it's essentially the same basic tool. It's a tool that can canvas or survey the reality around us. It can represent that information in a mental image that we can use like a map to figure out what we want to do. And then at a spiritual level, that's also true. So with respect to what I'm talking about today, what I want to get at here is that this one Spirit, using the founding fathers, again, as the kind of foundation to this discussion, I'm going to say the one Spirit is the trust or the set of rights that God gave us as a set of tools to learn how to work together in harmony. Because when you create harmony with somebody, when I create an agreement to go meet up with you for dinner, then what I'm basically doing is our two wills that might be all over the place are now joining together in one will so that we can actually move our bodies and our minds and our spirits together to get to a singular place to do something. And that's what I would argue are one of the interpretations of spirits are. Because where do rights live? Do rights live in your head? Well, no, not necessarily, because before my head existed, before I was alive on this planet, that the rights that I'm using right now existed. I have the right to think, I have the right to talk, I have the right to move my body, I've got all these different rights, right? So I would say the one Spirit is the collective set of universal or unalienable rights that each individual comes with that's universal, meaning everybody has them. So let's continue here. Now, if the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not, for that reason, stop being part of the body. Exactly. So just because I can say, and to use the reference of the human race here, just because I can say, well, I'm not human anymore, like this whole trans nonsense, it's like, I'm a cat now. Well, you can say that you're a cat, but it doesn't make you a cat. You're still a human being. Every part of you that makes you a human being is still there. Except the part of you that matters most, which is your will to acknowledge the fact that a human being is not functioning properly. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not, for that reason, stop being a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? Meaning, if we were all exactly the same, where would our the different aspects of ourselves be? Well, they wouldn't be there if we were all just clones of each other. You know, even a clone, which is an interesting subject to go on a little tangent here, isn't exactly the same thing, meaning a clone occupies a different body. It was grown in a different place. And, you know, we have clones, although we call them twins, identical twins. So identical twins are not totally and perfectly identical. They occupy different time and space. They have a separate mind. They have a separate free will. So what does that mean? Well, it means that with respect to the what I would call the human race or the body of Christ, each of us has a very unique attribute, a very unique perspective, and a unique purpose that God gave us. And we learn how to blend those together. We get freedom. We get the ability for not only me to have what I want, but you to have what you want. But it requires wisdom too. So let's keep going with this. But in fact, God has placed the parts in the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. So again, I think there's a lot of different ways to interpret this. But what I, with the purpose of a discussion, you know, civilization, right? We have each of us has these rights. So we have the same right. I have the same right to speak. You have the same right to speak. But because you're different and you were created for a different purpose and you have a different calling, in Eastern philosophy, they call it a dharma, meaning a life purpose. Like God gave us each a unique mission. Well, my mission is a little different than your mission. There's overlap for sure, but we each have a different mission. So the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you, and the head cannot say to the feet, I do not need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. That's right. That's another very interesting component here, meaning that just because, you know, let's say I'm, what is one of the skills I lack? I do not know how to work on cars. I am not a car mechanic, okay? So I'm weak in the capacity of being a car mechanic. But ask yourself, how many different jobs does it take to run a functional civilization? Well, you need more than just being a car mechanic. You need a bunch of different jobs. So while I'm not an expert at, you know, necessarily any given field, I might have stronger strengths in one field. And when we combine those together, again, in trust, using our freedom of speech to create a situation where we can have a social contract or an agreement or a constitution where each of our rights can be protected by each other, then we can have the most freedom possible because a healthy and functioning civilization creates maximum freedom. Let me put it to you this way. As broken as our civilization is right now, which it definitely is, our civilization is really badly broken, we still get all these amazing things. And that's because as much as the cabal might hate God, and I think they do hate God, they have to use the tools that God gave them to do what they're going to do. And they need order. And in order to create order, they have to create a system that create a system where all of our rights and abilities can at least blend together in some fashion to make things work. So when we have the society we have, as broken as it is, and as much chaos as there is, and as much divide and conquer as there is, it's actually kind of like a thin smear of divide and conquer sitting on top of a giant ocean of a lot of commonality and a lot of cooperation. But that thin smear is a world of difference. So imagine, what would it take if everybody actually sacrificed their desires for total and complete freedom, where you don't have to do anything you want, to work together? Well, this is kind of what they're getting at here. What if happens when the eye says to the hand, I do not need you? Well, in law, we call that contempt. If you're living in a house with a bunch of other people, and one of the people says, you know what, I'm not going to flush the toilet anymore, or I'm not going to empty the dishwasher anymore, or I'm not going to close the front door anymore or lock the house anymore. Well, that's a necessary duty. In order to have a functioning household, you don't need just one ingredient. You don't need half of the ingredients. You need all of the ingredients. And that means when you have a functioning society, it's exactly the same way. And when one person decides, F you, I'm going to do whatever I want, then you get a broken society. All right, so where were we here? And the parts that are indispensable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. So that he's getting into, you know, just some different variations of the fact that each part of the body has a certain aspect or purpose. But God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there could be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. So what does that mean? It means that we are our brother's keeper. It means that when you live in a house with somebody and you want it to actually work functionally, then you care about what effect your actions have on the people around you. You're actually open to hearing about the effect of that your actions have the people around you, and you do your duty, because nobody can live in a house, nobody can live on earth without having something to do to survive. So if we all work together, then, and we all have equal concern, meaning there's no contempt for you. So if I, let's say you come to me and you're like, hey man, you know, the other day when you took out the trash, you did, you know, you didn't leave the barrel in the right place and I couldn't get out of the driveway as easily. Well, my response to that, if I have equal concern for you, is, oh, really? No kidding. All right. Well, let me be humble and receptive, and let me hear what you have to say so we can create a more perfect union. We can create a better functioning house. If one part of the body suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. That's exactly right. So this is true whether or not you have a functioning society or not, because God created us to be so interconnected with each other that when one person has their rights abrogated, when one person is enslaved, when one person is cheated, then that materially affects the whole of society. Now, it might not be like, you know, world ending where like the lights don't turn on and the plumbing stops working and, you know, you can't go to the gas station to get gas or any of these other things, but it has an effect. And this is one of the things I'm going to be putting in my book, is that, you know, you might be asking yourself, well, how much cheating is acceptable in an election? Well, none, because God said, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect, or at least that's the part of the Bible anyway. And what that means is that we have to care equally. We have to have concern for each other, and meaning we would not want to abide anyone cheating anybody else. Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it. And God has placed in the church, first of all, apostles, second, prophets, third, teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, of helping, of guidance, and of different kinds of tongues. Are all apostles, all prophets, or are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers? Do all work miracles? Do all have gifts of healing? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? Now eagerly desire the greater gifts. So, what I would argue here, or one interpretation anyway, again, there's many different interpretations of this. So what I think is being discussed here is that we each have a certain set of abilities. And, you know, if you would think about it, like, well, in a civilization, what does it take to have the maximum benefit? How much freedom can I get in my civilization? Well, if I have chaos, you know, if you're in a basketball game and everybody's just running around like crazy and things are just going completely nuts, then the freedom I need to actually play the game well, because if I want to play the game fairly, then one of the purposes behind a good game is that you want to measure the quality of the playmanship of one of the players. You need a perfectly functioning game, meaning you need the rules to be honored properly in order to really achieve that goal. If a little bit of cheating happens, it might not totally destroy the game, but it's not going to be the same quality of measurement as if everything was working together. And that also means that when it comes to a civilization, because in a lot of ways, civilization is a bunch of overlapping games, right? When it comes to a marriage, there's all these different things that are happening. The husband and wife have to serve each other. They are one flesh, all these different things, right? Well, in order to have the benefit of what happens when a bunch of husbands and wives come together, to have electricity, to have sound coming through a computer on your desktop or coming through your TV, to have running water, then those are like those higher skills or abilities that God kind of laid in the game of life, so to speak, that we can achieve through working together. So in reality, the more our civilization adheres to the rule of law, the more we are our brother's keeper, the more we use our freedom of will to create more perfect contracts and a more perfect union, the more freedom we're actually going to get from our society. The more my ability to serve my brothers and my sisters in this world by humbling myself by acknowledging my mistakes, by trying to work to overcome them, all those kind of things are going to directly contribute to the quality of life that I provide for everybody else. And because we're all living on the same planet, whether we like it or not, we're all serving in a way the fellow human beings, because our fellow human beings, because every time I go to do something, that choice creates a butterfly effect that ripples throughout the whole of civilization. And although there's a good reason to have borders and countries. So I'm not saying that, we all live in one giant, planet and there's no need for borders or countries or anything like that. No, I am not saying that. But what I'm saying is that there, even in a planet where there's different countries, which we have here, you can't just as a country do whatever the hell you want. You have to, in some way, honor the rights of other people, because if you don't, then they're going to get pissed off and they're going to try to kill you and create war. So in closing here, I think freedom needs a civilization in the same way that you need a car in order to travel from one place to another. Because the full promise, and this is what I think is hinted at or talked about quite a lot, and certainly in Christian scripture and Christian theology, is that the kingdom of heaven is not just like this little like thing where we all live together and happy and we all go to the same church together and all these kind of things. I think the kingdom of heaven is the perfect harmony that we create by following or honoring God's will, meaning we search for and strive for perfection. And when we do that, we unlock, just like a game, like, if anybody's ever played a video game before, you unlock different abilities and success. Just like when you learn how to play and bring your A game to a sports game, what happens? Well, you can compete with other different players in different areas. If you're in basketball, I think it's called a convention or a conference. If it's, baseball, if you really work well with your team together and everybody humbles themselves and strives to be their brother's keeper with respect to the game of baseball in the team that they're playing on, then that team could go to the World Series. So God laid and he filled our reality and our civilization and our own human potential with all these higher abilities and these higher things and these rewards and benefits that we're going to be able to enjoy. But we got to learn how to live together. And the cabal doesn't want that to happen, because the cabal secretly creates a kind of dark order or a dark harmony behind the scenes. And then because we're all confused, we can't see that we're being cheated. And two, we can't have civilization serve us properly. Because in a truly functioning civilization, which, it's debatable if we even have anything like that, although clearly we're doing something right, because we have all these amazing things like lights and, medicine and all this kind of stuff. Our problems would be solved much better, so we'd have a lot less problems. And then the problems we couldn't solve would be alleviated because we have true fellowship with each other. One of the beautiful things that God created is that when I have a problem, I can actually talk to somebody about it. I can talk to you guys about it. You can talk to me about your problems, and we can create fellowship around that problem. And that as a result of that, neurologically, that thing that was originally a problem that was like really driving me crazy and causing a lot of misery for me now is actually a tool for it to create and achieve a state of fellowship. We can bond. We can have a good time as a result of talking about our problems. And people do that all the time. That's what venting's all about, And, there's a whole aspect to helping each other live better lives by simply being willing to hear about each other's problems and doing that in a trusting, honorable way. So anyway, civilization is amazing. And the more we learn how to use our rights and trust with each other and create a truly rule of law society, the more we're going to live in a fabulously amazing world that is just so much beyond what we can conceive of now. And I think that's kind of what the Trump and the Patriots are trying to do. They're trying to wrestle society away from these batshit crazy cabalists who have been secretly manipulating, our society for hundreds of years behind the scenes. And they want to give it back to you, the people. You remember that speech from 2017? So anyway, all right, everybody. Well, let me just check the comments real quick. We got a few more minutes. Let's see. There's a lot of good characters. Let me see. There's a lot of good character behind that beard, folks. Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. I do truly have a passion. I mean, my wife probably, we could tell you in the chat how much I rant and rave about these things, and so I definitely have a passion for this kind of stuff. That's why I'm writing a book about it. All right, everybody. So let me know in the closing here. I'll ask this question. If the Great Awakening happened tomorrow, what would one thing you want it to be? So what would you want in this new Great Awakening world? Would it be the ability to have your family closer next to you? Would you want, I don't know, to go traveling? Would you want to get rid of all your debt? Like, if the Great Awakening happened tomorrow and it would truly fix our civilization and every problem that you could possibly imagine was somehow a lot easier to solve, what would you do with it? Go ahead and let me know in the comments. While that question is being answered, I'm going to pop in the last wonderful ad from our sponsors, and then we'll close out the show.
In today's fast-paced world, peace of mind is priceless. That's where Badlands Media steps in. Preparing for life's uncertainties is about being ready for anything, right where you are. Welcome to the Badlands Media Shop. We've partnered with Patriot companies offering products that empower you to prepare for any eventuality comfortably from your home. The Badlands Media Shop has everything you need to secure your peace of mind. Browse the virtual aisles. Prepare your family for the year ahead with products you can trust from companies that share your values. Whether it's growing your own food or prepping long-term storage, protecting your family, or stocking up on emergency supplies, we've got you covered. Get prepared. Visit Badlands Media Shop at badlandsmedia.tv/shop today. Every purchase supports a freedom-loving business as well as Badlands Media. That's badlandsmedia.tv/shop. Thank you for your continued support.
All right, everybody. So the question was, if the Great Awakening happened tomorrow and the Trump and the Patriots totally restored our constitutional republic and we had a fantastic society, the rule of law was turned, there was no more cheating, there was no more crime, all these wonderful things, what would we have? What would we want? So here are some of the answers. Let's see, where is it here? Okay. So Sammy says, justice for Taylor Michelle. I 100% agree. I won't put you on blast, but if you're talking about what I think you're talking about, I 100% agree. Geary T says, living debt-free, 100%. Can you imagine a world where you don't have any more debts? I mean, that's a whole other thing. Maybe I'll do a whole episode on money because there's an enlightened economy, which we have not had ever in our country, is so far beyond what we can imagine as far as benefits that you'd be shocked. So maybe we'll talk about that at some point. Let's see. Tattooed Teacher says, good health and long lives for everyone. 100%. That's another very interesting thing. You know, the Bible talks about, shame on me for not remembering this, but there was somebody in the Bible who lived for like 800, 900 years. I don't actually think that's far from the truth. There's a lot of science to suggest that when you have people living in trust with each other, where nobody's cheating and we actually have like a good functional society, that literally our bodies start running better because we're no longer stressed out. We actually have so much trust and confidence that the drain of energy and vitality from our bodies is significantly reduced. So I think that's actually possible. Lulu says that people would know God. Oh, I 100% agree. We're watching The Chosen right now, me and my wife, and man, that's one of the reasons I love the show, because I'm really into studying, you know, the nature of reality, God, the purpose of existence. I've talked a lot about the Urantia book, but I study all sorts of different things, and it's like something that I'm so passionate about. And man, I personally would want a civilization where we can have long discussions about that kind of stuff and how we can use the ideas of God and God itself to make things better. We got Rhino Hunter. Thanks for the wisdom and the clear articulation, Justin. My pleasure. We got Leave the Storm. No one should have the ability to print money for free. Another man has to work for. Fix the money world. Fix the money, fix the world. 100%. That's a very insightful comment, because that's what basically happens. And that's also true for prices. So if you gouge somebody with a price, Well, that gouging of a price actually has a consequential effect that ripples across a civilization. And if you're too greedy, then you actually steal freedom from another person. That's exactly the world we're living in today. These companies are so greedy that they print so much money that we all have to spend most of our time working our asses off for, you know, 90% of our lives. And we still don't really have the freedom that comes from that while they enjoy all of it. For people to see Jesus give his life because he loved them so much, 100%. Lulu says, JoJo, great minds. Let me, it's hard to see these comments and click on them at the same time. Firestorm, Flying Storm says that our Constitution will be restored the way the founders intended. 100%, man. I cannot wait for that. It's part of the reasons I'm writing this book, because all this information has been lost. Jason of TGA says, I kind of already have everything I want, need. Maybe I need new goals. Yeah, damn right you do. I'm sure there's a few goals you could think of, man. I'm just giving you a hard time. Let's see. That was an excellent. G-Town says that was an excellent presentation tonight. Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. Sometimes I'm not sure if people like geeking out about this stuff as much as I do, but I'm really glad that you guys do. Closeness to our creator, Roy G. Biv 2. This is good. Thank you, Justin. I'll watch again late night for dinner prep. Ah, thanks, Alexandria Kirk. Let's get to... I would like to live my last part of my life knowing I am safe and children are doing well. That's me too, man. I mean, or woman, I don't know. How might dare I assume your gender? I completely agree. I mean, that's what happens when you live in a functioning society, is like you can actually trust other people. We don't need crazy time and energy spent on trying to protect our rights from brigands and thieves and whatnot, because we each become the policeman for each other. Let's see. Walk with Jesus is what Misty Nicole says. All right. I think I'm coming. Here we go. Come, Cam Cass Hass. That we love each other. Yes, I think that would be the case. If we lived in a really functioning society, I mean, that's another thing. The cabal use society to create a lot of misery and suffering. And you know what happens psychologically is the other people in our lives, instead of being an allies for our lives, that they are an obstacle to our better lives. And that means that we start to resent them for it. And they weaponize resentment at a very sophisticated level. Maddie May 123 says, I'm with Flystorm and Force the Constitution. Awesome, Sammy. That's great. I really pray for that to happen one day. And I pray for many other things to happen that, like I said, I won't blow you up on the chat here. But yeah, no income tax. Well, we won't need income tax, buddy. We won't even need taxes in a perfect world as far as I'm concerned. Yes, the person was Moses. Thank you. I appreciate that. A few people said that. All right, I think Methuselah, that's the one I was thinking of, Methuselah. Okay, so I should probably give it a stop here, or the other Badlanders are going to be pissed off because I'm using my rights and I'm not respecting their space and their territory if I go over my show. Isn't that interesting? So, all right, everybody. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for participating. I appreciate all of the Rumble rants I received. Please hit thumbs up on this video. Let us know here at Knowledge Base that we have your love and support. Also, don't forget to support our lovely sponsors. We heard from River BTC. You can do Bitcoin on River BTC. You can check that out at badlandsmedia.com/river. Don't forget, you got the Flynn movie, badlandsmedia.tv Flynn movie. You also have MyPillow, so you can use some promo, I believe it's promo code Badlands, to save on some MyPillow products. Help support Mike Lindell, who's another amazing patriot. And of course, you can help support Badlands at the same time. And the last ad, man, what was the last ad? I'm spacing out hardcore. It was Badlands itself. So yeah, go to the Badlands shop and you get all sorts of amazing things for Badlands itself. So, all right. Much love, everybody. Thank you so much. I will see you next time on another episode of Knowledge Base. Take care, everybody.
Looking for more ways to support Badlands Media? Head over to badlandsmedia.tv and click on the Support Badlands button, or go straight to badlandsmedia.tv/boost. You can now give a Badlands boost just like a Rumble Rant, only better. Support your favorite shows with a boost anytime, even if you're not watching live. Your donation will go directly to Badlands with no middleman. Shop America First Companies at the Badlands shop. With every purchase, you'll be supporting Badlands Media and an America First business. Don't forget to become a Badlander. Opt in to be alerted to new shareable content and be on our street team. And by all means, click on that thumb. Help your favorite Badlands show reach the top of the Rumble leaderboard. Thank you all for helping us grow Badlands. We are the news now.
Thank you so much for joining us, and don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video. And a special thank you to all of our advertising partners. Please remember to shift your dollars to support those businesses that support Badlands Media.